The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. I love it when I hear people come up to me and tell me that they've seen the Pella commercial on TV. It was a really cool experience, and my experience with Pella doing work on my home was also an amazing experience because the showroom in Omaha is incredible. There's a showroom in Lincoln as well, but man, the service, the finished product is just first class the whole way. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Shoot 360 Lincoln. My brother and I are owners of this basketball training facility that is the world's most advanced basketball training facility, and it's right here in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's a membership-based national franchise that uses NBA-level technology that provides real-time feedback after every shooting, passing, and ball handling rep you take inside of our facility. You need to try your free one-hour workout. That's right. Your first workout is free. F-R-E-E. You're going to get 30 minutes of shooting, 30 minutes of ball handling and passing to show you, give you a little taste of what being a member at Shoot 360 is like. So go to Shoot360Lincoln.com, click Request Free Workout, and then sign up and fill out the I'm Interested in Becoming a Member form. And we'll contact you and we'll set up a time that works for you to have your free one-hour workout. That's Shoot360Lincoln.com, Shoot360Lincoln.com. And this podcast is brought to you by the Autograph app. The Autograph app was co-founded by the GOAT himself, Tom Brady, and this app is really cool. Think of it like a rewards program, but for being a fan and doing what you do as a fan in terms of reading about your team and listening to podcasts and consuming content. And the more you use it, the more points you earn, which then unlocks rewards for you. Pretty cool. Download the Autograph app and use the code BAH, my last name, B-A-H-E. That's code BAH, B-A-H-E. Download the Autograph app and enter the code BAH. Do it today. All right, so on the podcast today, it's just me and you, and we are heavy Nebraska football today. I got a handful of takes. Four or five Nebraska football thoughts I got for you. And then I got a little thought on Caitlin Clark at the end. I got about 10 pages of notes here, so let's get to it. The first one is about this Chasing 3 documentary. So I haven't watched every episode of the Chasing 3 documentary for Nebraska football, but in what I've watched so far, one of my initial takeaways from this documentary series is this. It is remarkable to watch, and a great reminder as well, that for a college football program to be successful, it takes so, so many people. We tend to whittle everything down to the head coach. It's all on them. Everything is on them. They got to do it all and kind of run it all and oversee it all and be involved in it all. When in all reality, that just isn't possible. And I was just struck at the reminder of a college football program is about 150 to 200 people strong, man. And for it all to work, so many people have to be great. Not good, not average, great. From the strength coach to the nutrition people to the position coaches to the support staff to the academic people to the social media team to the scout team and beyond and on and on and on. They all have to be great. And I just was struck by that. You know, I'm a basketball guy. I know that world. I've lived in that world. I'm still in that world. And it certainly takes a village in that world as well. But just the sheer volume of people involved in an entire college football operation, an entire college football program, is staggering. And while, yes, Matt Rhule is in charge and the buck stops with him, and he's in charge of hiring those people and all that, while all that is true, he can't be everywhere all at once. The nutrition people have to be elite. The strength staff, they got to be elite. The support staff people have to be on the point. All those people do play a vital role in how the day-to-day heartbeat of the program operates. And when you hear coaches talk about culture, they often talk about the day-to-day element of it. Doing the right thing, the right way, every day, all the time. Well, Rhule will lead the charge in the ways that he can day to day, but he needs the rest of the crew doing the same. And I've just been reminded of that in watching this. That struck me. Also, damn, I love me some Nash Hutmacher, some Polar Bear, and Ty Robinson. Those guys are they had really good seasons, and there's still another level for those two guys to elevate to, and I hope they do. The whole thing on Nash, the Polar Bear wrestling and getting to the right weight and going and performing and everybody going to watch it was just such a cool story. So I'm rooting for those two guys. And the reality is, for Nebraska to get to the level defensively they need / want to get to, those two guys, Robinson and the Polar Bear, they need to take it up another level. And lastly, in watching the Chasing Three doc, just some initial thoughts. I think what Matt Rhule is doing with the access to the program in documentary form is genius. It's really smart. From the Hard Knocks type documentary during fall camp and parts of the season last year to this Chasing Three documentary type series in the spring, Matt Rhule is letting you behind the curtain to see some really cool stuff. And Matt Rhule is right on with this, but he's also smart with this. He's right on in the sense of a part of the job description and a part of your job as the head coach of the Nebraska football program is you need to be promoting your program at all times. You do. In a competitive and social media-driven world where attention can be fleeting and hard to capture and really hard to keep, you have to be creating content promoting yourself. You just do. I even know for me in my life, I need to do a better job of this. I need to do a better job of promoting Nick Baugh, the college basketball TV analyst with Fox, and the Nick Baugh podcast, and my business, Shoot 360 Lincoln. It's the world we live in right now. Like, you have to kind of be a promoter. So Rhule is right on in understanding the importance of selling his program, but he's smart as well. Because think about this. He's showing the fans and the public a ton of behind-the-scenes stuff, giving them a lot of access with his program. But he's controlling all of it. He gets to control what gets out, what content makes the documentaries, what message gets pushed, all that. Practices are still closed to the media. Steve Sippel isn't watching every play of every practice, of every scrimmage, of every rep, of every drill. So it's not like the access has been increased on that front. But it feels like we've all never had more access because of the documentary-style videos that are being pushed out. So it's smart, too. Matt Rhule is trying to give you tons of access, but it's on his terms. He's grabbing the wheel of the access car, and he's driving it rather than being in the back seat or sitting shotgun and at the mercy of maybe how things get painted or how things get portrayed. So it's almost like a Jedi mind trick, too. We are seeing and learning a ton about the program with some really cool behind-the-scenes footage, but it's all calculated and controlled. Just like those viral locker room speeches, Matt Rhule knows how to play the game. He knows it's good to keep the camera rolling. He just gets the final say in what gets out and how it gets packaged. So I appreciate and really enjoy the access, but I also can say at the same time, pretty clever by Matt Rhule to get ahead of the messages and control a lot of it too. Next thought with Nebraska football. You know, over the years, as we've seen coaches come and go, I think we always knew that taking over at a place like Nebraska, there is a delicate balance for whoever that head coach is, of embracing the past, embracing the history, embracing the traditions, but not being prisoner to them. And definitely not at the expense of that coach 100% being themselves and putting their imprint and their fingerprints on the program and how they want it to be run. That can be a hard balance. You can't go Bill Callahan and just put a middle and just put your middle finger to the past. But you also can't just be completely stuck in the rearview mirror of Nebraska football and not evolve or be authentic to who you are as a head coach. That's tricky. That's challenging to do. Because every coach, when they take over a program, every coach has to endear themselves to a fan base. And every coach has to leverage whatever positives that program's history has to help their program. But you also can't do things that you don't want to do either, right? You can't take over Indiana basketball and try to be Bob Knight if that's not who you are or what you want to do. You can't take over Alabama football and try to be Nick Saban if that's not who you are and how you want to run your program. But you need to take the Alabama program or the Indiana basketball program and utilize some of that history and tradition to your benefit. And this was always going to be a challenge at Nebraska for whoever the head football coach is, especially when the times that Nebraska football was king of the sport get further and further and further away. Because there is a lot to navigate with being the head coach at Nebraska. There's the black shirts. There's the walk-on program. There's Tom Osborne. There's the former players who are all littered throughout the state in Lincoln and Omaha and have a lot of powerful media positions. There's in-state recruiting. There's the style of play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's just to name a few. And this is where I think we got to stop for a second and heap some praise on Matt Rhule. I was thinking about this and thinking about Rhule. I feel like it's not even possible to do a better job than he's doing at respecting the past, honoring the history and traditions of the program, but also completely being his own man and putting his imprint on the Nebraska football program. He's doing things the way he wants to do them. That is first and foremost. But I also think he's finding ways to definitely implement and leverage and honor the past in a positive way. He still honors and respects the black shirts, but he also has the single digit number thing. He totally embraces and loves and admires Tom Osborne. He understands the politics and the importance of some of the optics with in-state recruiting. So he's handled things accordingly while still handling the roster and filling the roster how he wants to. I just feel like Nebraska's program and how it operates on a day-to-day basis right now has never felt more old school and new school at the same time. Matt Rhule has done just a great job with this. Nebraska football fans are very protective of the past, and rightfully so. Heck, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those fans who wants to preserve and honor the past because it's meant so much to me and so much to this state and so much to some of the best memories I have growing up. And Matt Rhule has 100% always totally embraced that, but he also hasn't ever felt like he's made concessions because of it. He's doing things how he wants to do them, but he's found a way to wed the past of Nebraska football with his vision, which can be really hard to do. Sometimes for some coaches, that can be, those things can be at odds. Now, there are some people that feel like for Nebraska to grow, they almost need to completely shed the past and completely move on. I disagree. To me, the past, the history of this program, the fan base are just about the only thing this program has really going for it. To toss that in the trash completely is silly to me. But I also know you can't live in 1971 or 1994 or 1997. You got to live in 2024. I know that you got to evolve, you got to adapt, and you got to grow. And I just think Matt Rhule has done all of that masterfully. I mean, look at the spring leagues for spring football. To me, this is a pretty good example of wedding the past with how he wants to do it. Tom Osborne, the god of Nebraska football, swears by the way they practice with multiple teams and multiple reps and reps, and competition and competition and competition, multiple fields going, different things. Well, Matt Rhule has found a way to take that school of thought and make it new school with the spring leagues and make it fun. And you got social media pushes behind it, updating you on the scores. Also, like, all that is just past, present. Let me make that into a nice casserole. Boom. It's just really cool to watch Matt Rhule handle being the head coach at Nebraska in this way. He totally embraces the past players, Frank Solich, Tom Osborne, but he also is being his authentic self in how he's running the program. Matt Rhule still just, he feels like such a good fit, and he's such an easy guy to root for. And I think a lot of that sentiment of feeling that way is rooted in kind of what I'm talking about here. So I just want to say that stuff out loud in the moment, praising Matt Rhule. Next topic is an email I got from Tyler. Said, Nick, love the podcast, especially the Husker football pods with Bo Root. My question is, what record would be disappointing for Nebraska football next season in terms of their final record? That's from Tyler. Okay, you look at it. Year two, Matt Rhule. Year one, Nebraska goes 5-7. They lost four straight to end the season. They should have went 6-6, even with an incredibly inept and poor offense and pretty average to below average to poor quarterback play. So they were there. They were 5-7 with all the injuries to the offensive skill positions, the quarterback situation, Jeff Sims being a complete bust. You're having to all of a sudden play Harburg. Despite all that stuff, they were sitting with five wins with four games left. So now you look at year two. Defense returns almost everyone of note, including Tony White, Isaac Gifford, the two big boys up front, Polar Bear and Ty Robinson. This could be a top 10 defense next year. You landed the number one quarterback in the country in Dylan Raiola. You, on paper, are getting your skill players at least back to health and have some more bodies there. And you have an incredibly manageable schedule that includes the first five games at home. You're not starting on the road at Illinois or on the road at Minnesota or on the road in Dublin, Ireland against Northwestern. No, you're starting at home against UTEP. To me, anything less than 6-6 is a huge disappointment, in my opinion. And I don't even really feel like saying that. That's a hot take, or I'm setting an unfair bar. I've told you guys a bunch over the course of the last year. I'm kind of done explaining away losses, losing records, not at least going 6-6. I'm done with it. I've done it a lot. We've all done it a lot. We've all just found amazing ways to rationalize and excuse teams going 4-8, 5-7. I'm done with it. It's not that hard to go 6-6 at a place like Nebraska with all the resources and all the people invested in it. I thought it was just a disappointment to not go 6-6 last year. But the fact that it was year one makes it where you go, okay, it's year one. Don't want to get crazy here. But this year, with that defense and that schedule, it feels like at least 6-6. Because I've heard Steve Sipple frame it like this, and it's simple. He always said, you know, it would be hard to sell progress at 5-7. It's hard to sell the notion of progress. If the season ends, picture Black Friday, Nebraska playing Iowa, the season ends and Nebraska is 5-7. Think about that this year, year two. boy, you'd really have to do a lot of mental gymnastics just on a simple front end of it, thinking about it now in mid-April, of how this program would be is trending. How are they trending upward if that's the case? So for me, anything less than 6-6 would be a big disappointment. Now, the only thing I will say, to play devil's advocate with myself here, in saying that, I am doing quite a bit of assuming on two fronts. One, with Dylan Raiola, and the other is with coaching and managing and winning close games. With Dylan Raiola, I'm just assuming that he'll be an upgrade and a pretty sizable upgrade at quarterback. But it's a big assumption. He's never played a down of college football. And I'm penciling him in as the day one starter and a solid one right away. I look at him and kind of think, can he be as good as Adrian Martinez was as a freshman? I think absolutely. And if he is, with that schedule and that defense, Nebraska ain't going 5-7. And the other element of assuming right now is the close games coaching management thing. It's hard. How much of last year's close games, I mean, that's the whole kind of premise of like chasing three points, just the close losses. How much of last year's close game struggles were about quarterback play? And maybe some injury bug just being too prevalent at the skill position spots. How much of last year's close game struggles were about those things, and how much were about coaching? Big news, I'm excited to be working with Autograph, co-founded by the GOAT himself, Tom Brady. The Autograph app is where your fandom lives. The app gives diehard fans like you access to all the best college sports content, fan challenges, and exclusive rewards like discounted tickets, exclusive merchandise, and more. You can unlock rewards like these just for doing the things you already do as a fan, like listening to this podcast, following news on your team, sharing your favorite content, and more. Download the free Autograph app in the App Store or Google Play Store today and use the referral code BAH, my last name, B-A-H-E. That's referral code BAH, B-A-H-E. See you at the game. I think the reality is, it's not a fun answer, but the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. But for as much as I want Matt Rhule and like Matt Rhule and want Matt Rhule to work here, I didn't think the coaches were great at times in close games. Personnel decisions and play calling at Minnesota, I think, might have cost Nebraska. End of the half, you got points. Instead, interception. Middle part of that fourth quarter, you have a chance to salt the, you know, really kind of chew some clock. You talked about running the ball. Instead, you come out throwing. You talked about Anthony Grant fumbling all the time. He's in. He fumbles. Changes the game. Throwing the ball at the goal line with the third string quarterback, Chuba, against Maryland late was bad. Clock management on the final drive at Wisconsin, I didn't think it was very good. There's a laundry list of management things in that Iowa Black Friday loss that were not good. So for as much as better players, and in particular better quarterback play, will change some of this, I also don't think it just explains away and rectifies all those coaching things, in my opinion. So for as much as the players got to get better, coaches got to get better too. But to circle back to the question from Tyler, to me, what record would be a disappointment? 5-7. Better go 6-6. On a variety of levels. Next thought. So Matt Rhule, in one of his last press conferences, he was asked about the running backs, and I wasn't as struck about what he was talking about with the players themselves, but more of what he started to talk about philosophically in terms of how he likes to handle the running backs that really struck me. And I'm not sure I vibe with what he was trying to sell here. Now, I'm paraphrasing here, But Matt Rhule basically said that he wants to have three running backs. Like he wants to play three running backs. He wants one with maybe 20 carries, then running back number two to maybe get 12 carries, and then the leftovers go to another running back. He wants to play three running backs. And then he also talked about how giving one running back 25-plus carries isn't doing right by them and that they'll be beat up by the time they get to the NFL. Those things were all a part of his running back answer. But the philosophy part of it struck me. And there's a lot to unpack with that. First of all, I think it's interesting for Rhule, a college coach, the idea that he would be making personnel decisions of who's in the game and how many carries that person gets based on saving miles on a player for their NFL career? Hold on, what? I get that I'm taking this maybe too far, but that school of thought is flawed to me. I mean, you do what needs to be done to win the game. His job is to win games at Nebraska, not keep running backs' legs fresh for the chances of them getting to the NFL and being good there. What? Like, when I heard him say that, I was like, what? Hold on. I get Rhule likes to paint himself as like, I'm the pro player guy. I'm the pro player guy in more ways than one. I'm pro player, and I'm for the players getting to the pros. Like, that's his thing. And I get him trying to leverage that fact that, hey, I was in the NFL. I know how to get there, and I know what's important in getting you there. I get all that. But at the same time, you're the head coach at Nebraska. You're not at Carolina anymore. You're not in the NFL. You're at Nebraska. You're the head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. It's just a weird thought to be on your mind. I also think it kind of jives with a broader thing too, of like, I also think we've kind of gone into this interesting direction in what I think you'd call the load management era of sports, where they're worried about too many carries or too many minutes in the NBA. I mean, NBA guys have never had more treatment and recovery stuff for them, yet they're still out and missing games. Like, I'm something I like to do, like, when I'm riding my Peloton, that you now have Netflix on the Peloton, and I love, I don't know what it is, just because he's my sports hero, and I find it unbelievably rewatchable. I like to watch The Last Dance like over and over and over. So I'm like, I start it over and I watch it all the way through, and then I start it over and I just really enjoy it. But I mean, Jordan in The Last Dance, like, this dude would play all 82 games and then smoke cigars. Like, he'd be in the locker room. Like, it's like the playoffs. In the middle of his first-round playoff series, and he's smoking cigars. You're like, what? He'd be smoking cards, playing cards till 3:30 in the morning and all this stuff. And then, like, but he played all 82 games and kicked everybody's ass. I thought a couple of years ago, Stan Van Gundy had a great tweet on this front. He said, this was Stan Van Gundy's tweet. He said, quote, 90s NBA teams had just a trainer and a strength coach. They practiced more often and harder and played back-to-backs. Teams now have huge medical and performance staffs and value rest over practice, yet injuries and games missed are way up. Something's not working. And I couldn't agree more with that. Now, I'm not a caveman who thinks that water is for sissies, and you should be having two-a-day, three-hour practices and killing everybody and all that. I'm not saying that. But I just think there's a line with all this. I believe in sports science. But can I also go, some of this is going a little too far. And it's Rhule's school of thought that he threw out there with, 25-plus carries just isn't doing right by the player, and that it'll get them beat up for the NFL. That's just too much for me. I'm like, what? What are we talking about here? Again, maybe I turn 40 next month, so maybe I'm getting to that part of my life where I'm just, I'm of a different era, because I'm of a different era with football and basketball. Like, if you are healthy, you play. If you are healthy, you play. If you are healthy and you are the best running back, run the ball a lot. Marcus Allen averaged 36 carries a game in 1981 at USC. 36! And he went on to play 16 years in the NFL at running back. I love Matt Rhule. I just disagree with going too far in that direction. And I'm from the era, and also I find a stud bell cow running back, give them as many carries as possible. If Dante Dowdell, for example, is the best running back of the crew and he's feeling good and he's feeling healthy, I'd rather give him 28, 29 carries than 20 just for the sake of giving some third stringer five carries or preserving whatever career Dante Dowdell may or may not ever have in the NFL. Just a thought and a reaction to that comment from Matt Rhule. Last thought. Switching gears to Caitlin Clark. Man, what this has been quite a moment over the course of the last 12 months, maybe 18 months. I honestly feel like in my lifetime, they're just, if you stop and smell the roses here, there hasn't been very many moments quite like this. That where an athlete puts their sport mainstream like this, and they are the 100% driver of it in a mega way. Tiger in 1997 made golf mainstream. He was the literal person shoving it forward. Michael Jordan, obviously, at different points of his career. I always remember my dad pointing out that my mom, on her own, was seeking out Chicago Bulls games on WGN just to watch Jordan in the late 80s or early 90s. Like I remember that anecdote. He's like, man, I knew Jordan was big when I would come home from work and she would be watching like the Bulls Cavs on WGN. It's like 1990. It's like, wow. But what Caitlin Clark has done this past year has been incredible, guys. She has changed the American sports public's viewing habits. You know how hard that is to do? Especially nowadays, in that we have a overload of options at our fingertips. It used to be you were at the mercy of whatever was on your TV and whatever was on like your four or five maybe sports channels, and in some ways sometimes just like the main networks. Like that's what was on, that was what you watched. Given all of, you know, Paramount Plus and Hulu and Netflix and Max and all the different sports streaming platforms and all the different games on TV, Caitlin Clark has changed American sports public viewing habits. Like the women's Final Four just outrated the men's. Fox Sports put Iowa women's basketball on Big Fox like every single weekend. And they would put, Fox would put their top highest paid play-by-play voice in Gus Johnson on the Iowa games. Not the UConn game, not the Villanova game. Not Danny Hurley, no, Caitlin Clark, Iowa women's basketball. She's put women's basketball in a different light and in an incredible place. And it is really cool, talking to Bo Root about this before we started recording our last pod, where it's like, it is cool that it's amazing that she has been given this stage and this platform and this opportunity, and she has delivered every time. It's like every big game that was on Big Fox or a big moment in the NCAA tournament against a big, she would have like 40 or have some incredible quarter or incredible half, or you know, she's hitting 28-foot pull-up threes or having 12 assists into it. It's amazing. But one of the things that is also amazing about it is I've found the reaction inside the world of women's basketball to be perplexing a little bit. Like, it seems like the people outside of the women's basketball world seem to love Caitlin Clark and embrace Caitlin Clark. And the people inside women's basketball don't as much. There feels like there is animosity towards her from the women's basketball world, and it's head scratching. It's interesting. I think there are maybe some women's basketball players like a Diana Taurasi. Like, in trying to unpack it, I've thought, okay, like, what is it? What is it about the women's basketball world? The people that are really in it, not casually in it, or who, you know, the people that have just swooped in and started watching women's basketball for the past year when they watched Caitlin Clark. I'm talking about the people that are actually in it. Why is there this seeming like they're not really wanting to totally put their arms around Caitlin Clark? I wonder if, like, the way I would maybe try to explain it when I hear, you know, Diana Taurasi or Lynette Woodard or different people that I've talked to in the women's college basketball world, the way they react to her or talk about her. Like, I wonder if some of it is like these women are feeling like, listen, we as women, we've been really damn talented basketball players for a long time, and y'all just didn't pay attention. And now you're paying attention and you're acting like Caitlin Clark, this girl from Iowa, like she's the only one that can play or the only one that has ever been able to play, and it's nonsense. I wonder if it's some of it is that. Like, listen, we've been doing this. We have been doing this. I don't know. That would be my... I don't know. Because there definitely seems like there's some jealousy behind a lot of it. But that would be the best way I can describe it or try to make sense of it. There's just some people that have just been busting their you-know-what behind the scenes for a long time and been good. And high-level basketball been being played it for a long time. And the sport for them immersed in it has been good for a long time. And it's maybe annoying for people to all of a sudden swoop in and just heap it all on Caitlin Clark. But it's just kind of like the reality of the situation. That's just how it is. Like, I'm really excited about the future of women's basketball, and Caitlin Clark is the driving force behind that sentiment for a lot of people. Not saying it's right or saying it's fair, but the profile of women's basketball is changing because of her. And that comment is not to be interpreted like nobody before her could play or was talented. They could. But you kind of just never know how the stars align and what really cuts through to the American public and really captivates them. It's kind of like the, you know, Bird, Magic, and Michael Jordan, what they did for the NBA. I mean, the NBA was on tape delay for the finals. The NBA was on tape delay and wasn't a massively popular sport and certainly wasn't a global sport before those three guys. Now, does that mean that there weren't good players before those three guys? Hell no. Of course not. Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, those guys could all play. But Magic, Bird, Jordan just captivated the American sports public and held their attention in a different and bigger and more profound way. And it changed the trajectory and profile and popularity of the sport. I don't think Jerry West needed to be upset at Larry Bird and Magic and how they grew the sport. I don't think Bill Russell needed to be upset at Michael Jordan for all the love and everything he was getting for how he made the it grew the game. And then it's I don't think Bill Russell would be like, man, what is this? Just like Diana Taurasi doesn't need to be upset or hate on Caitlin Clark for how she is growing the sport. To me, all of women's basketball inside the sport should be embracing Caitlin Clark. Because if she continues to drive ratings and drive popularity in the WNBA, that will benefit everyone. Period.